Hello, hello. Thank you for joining in to The Matrix is Real. My name is Neo, and man, the world is going crazy. But you wouldn't know it by looking at the stock market or looking at the price of gold these days. It's kind of what I wanted to talk about today is there are some globally, you know, paradigm-shifting events that are occurring right now, and the TV is not telling you to panic. I'm not either. Let me be clear. I think the people that are prepping right here, you know, it makes me laugh when I saw somebody the other day saying, you know, the price of meat is going to skyrocket. Go stock up while you still can. It's like, if you're a typical person, what, buy a couple like weeks worth extra and freeze it? Like just like, okay, like that, if you've ever watched The Walking Dead, prepping only takes you so far. Eventually, there's curveballs and there's ways you got to adapt. There's things that you're going to need. And so, you know, it's good to be prepared for an emergency, but at some point, you're going to have to adapt and figure it out anyway. So I'm not telling you to panic. I just want to talk about the significance of these events that are going on and what it means if you're looking at preserving your wealth, the amount of money you've acquired. There is, in my opinion, only one way right now to do so. So let's get into the major news. I just finished talking there's a gas leak at where I'm staying, and the guy they sent out, we were discussing this news, but also he asked me about cryptocurrencies, my opinion. And long story short, the news yesterday was that Saudi Arabia is actively considering the possibility of selling some or all of their oil in the Chinese yuan, which is China's currency, instead of the US dollar. Now, that might not seem like a big deal to the average person, but when you consider, just consider this for a second. There have been two people in the past, I would say 20 years, that tried to do the same thing. Two people. The first was Saddam Hussein. People don't remember or know this, but shortly before the invasion of Iraq following September 11th terrorist attacks, Saddam Hussein of Iraq was actively pursuing selling Iraqi oil in euros as opposed to dollars. Well, within a few, I think it was a year or two after that, a few years or maybe even less, might have been a few months, 9/11 happened, and even though, as we now know, there's more evidence that says that the Saudis were actively assisting the terrorists involved on September 11th than Iraq, the point is even back then, a lot of people were like, wait, why are we going and attacking and invading Iraq? Well, I can't definitively prove this, but if you look at the evidence and you know history, Saddam Hussein was looking to sell Iraqi oil in euros, effectively bypassing the dollar, which has been the global reserve currency since the Bretton Woods Agreement. I think it was in the 1940s following World War II. If the Saudis indeed follow through with their, you know, they're considering the consideration right now, this would be the first time since Richard Nixon convinced the Saudis to do the same and start selling their oil in dollars back in the 70s, this is not the same in terms of how big of an impact it will have on our planet. Its magnitude's higher. It's the same basic thing that is occurring, but the situations and the things at stake have changed dramatically. So back in the 70s, we had globalism to some extent, but there was still, I feel, a very large amount of, you know, of sovereign states, you know, the world. There was a lot of, quote, isolationism. A lot of countries didn't actively trade with each other, or it was very new. So the world was still, we lived on a planet together, but it was still kind of separated parts of the world, if you know what I mean. Versus now, globalization has spread, and yes, if you go to certain countries or certain areas of certain countries or certain countries just as a whole, there is still a lot of differences in terms of, you know, of people and culture, that sort of thing. But if you talk about other things, like, for example, the way the government operates, the way that militaries operate, the way that people are taxed, the type of technology used on the civilian population, from, you know, biometrics to the way they screen at airports, you know, that sort of thing. There is now a globalized, I guess, status quo for how various aspects of our daily lives operate. So one of those things that has changed and been part of that is commerce, money, that sort of thing. When you, and I'm explaining something called the U.S. petrodollar, when you force the world to sell their oil and other commodities in dollars, which is what happened with Nixon, he convinced the Saudis to do it, and then they created OPEC. Once OPEC was on board and convinced, you basically had the majority at the time of the oil produced on planet Earth being all sold in dollars, which creates a artificially high demand for that particular currency, because you need that final currency in order to get the commodity that you want. Whether it's, if you look right now, the global price index for all commodities is dollars. Okay, it's called reserve currency status. That is what everyone ultimately wants, dollars. That's why if you go to Mexico and you're from the United States, you can, you know, transact in pesos, but there has always been a bigger demand for dollars, because that's, it's the reserve currency. It's special. So in order, when that happens and you create that demand, you, it's almost like a weapon. You're allowed as a country to kind of do whatever you want. Number one, because unless countries are going to start, you know, going against the way the world works, they need your dollars to buy what they need. But the second thing is that this is where finance comes in banking. When you have the reserve currency, the central bank of whatever country, and all central banks are actually private, so that's kind of like an oxymoron a little bit. The Federal Reserve of the United States in the United States is not part of the U.S. government. It is a private bank. The U.S. government is a separate entity. So, but the Federal Reserve is the central bank for the United States. When you have that situation where you own the reserve currency and you also your country, you know, has that status of reserve currency, you can essentially print money as much as you want. And that is what has allowed and enabled the politicians in the United States to, you know, rack up over $30 trillion in public debt. Officially, when you count unfunded liabilities, it's you know, I think it's 60 to 90 trillion. And then when you calculate the derivatives market, which the U.S. government has basically said that they would back if they ever collapsed, now you're talking about like $1.5 quadrillion in liabilities, okay? So there's a mathematical, when you factor in interest, there's a mathematical impossibility of ever repaying that debt. So the collapse of the currency is always inevitable when you get to that situation and you start printing the money. What is going to happen is if the Chinese convince the Saudis to do what Nixon did to the Saudis in the 70s, you're going to all of a sudden start creating a new demand for the Chinese currency, but then dramatically reducing the demand for the U.S. currency, which is the dollar. The end result is that there is going to be runaway inflation, hyperinflation, amid the collapse of the global reserve currency, which is the U.S. dollar. Usually when this happens in history, that's when you have war. Okay, and every reserve currency in the history of this planet has only lasted for so long. The United States, by you know, historical standards, is overdue, especially when you consider what we've been doing for the past 10 to 20 years. And I say we, it's not we, it's the banking cartel, the global banking elite. I'm not telling this to scare anyone, but take my warning seriously. This will happen. It is an eventuality. I saw a 2014 interview with David Icke, who I know a lot of people mock for talking about reptilians and lizard people and stuff like that. But he predicted in 2014 that Ukraine was likely going to be a factor in World War III. So 8 years ago, this guy accurately predicted what's happening today, and it's not coincidence. This guy understands how the world works. He pays attention to current events, and he understands the larger agenda that is at play. World War III is happening right now because they're trying to implement a global government and, more importantly, currency in order to basically, quote, unify the world, which on paper sounds great, but in practice, what we're talking about is actually very deep and dark and evil. But backing up just a bit is the broader point I'm trying to make about the change in the currency is that when you reduce the supply, I'm sorry, the demand for what has been an expanding supply of money, those dollars have to go somewhere. What they're going to do is they're going to start chasing commodities because during a currency crisis or a financial crisis, that's ultimately what performs the best because, you know, you're going to need food, you're going to need, energy like gas, you're going to need, you know, you're going to need proven things like gold and silver, which have performed as money for 5,000 plus years. You're going to need these things. And so that's usually what performs and does best during these crises. Eventually, nobody's going to want the dollar. Nobody's going to want it. And if you read about the Weimar Republic in the 1930s, and Zimbabwe, and I think it was in the 2000s, both experienced a hyperinflation and the collapse of their currency. The difference is neither one of them had the world reserve currency status at the time. So there was, the impact was felt to their country, not the world. This is going to be world changing. And usually, like I said before, when you have a change in the monetary system, you coincidentally have global conflict and wars. That's not a coincidence. The reason why is people don't understand. Ron Paul said this very clearly and eloquently. Sanctions is the first act of war. And think about it. When I was a kid, I used to think differently. But when you sanction a country, the goal is to hurt the government, right? But that's not who you hurt. You hurt the regular people. Right now, the sanctions being imposed on Russia by the United States and its allies ultimately are going to hurt the general population far more than they'll ever hurt someone like Vladimir Putin, other than his, quote, grip on power, as quote, bad as a person you might say, and maybe he is, but you might say Putin is it worth sacrificing the livelihood of, all the people that live in Russia? I say no. So when you start restricting a country's ability to get the goods and services it needs, it'll try diplomatically to go around for a while, but if you ever make it hard enough, the end result is war. If you're not going to give us what we need or allow us to get what we need, the only option is to, is to fight you for it. Either that or let our people die and starve and that sort of thing. So, sanctions is the first act of war. So Putin invaded and the United States imposed sanctions and convinced its allies to do the same. We're already at war, okay? Vladimir Putin has also said in the past that being sanctioned as an individual would be, in his view, an act of war. So in his mind, we're already at war. right now, the price of gold has declined from its recent highs of like 2060 to debt back down. I think it was like at 1910, just a few minutes ago. So that's a pretty large swing. Gold is usually pretty boring. It stays, in a pretty narrow range unless there's something significant that happens. But we've had pretty big price swings up and down recently. But right now, it seems like there's a lot of optimism that things are going to get ironed out. And I hope the same. I really do. I'm not rooting for war. I'm of the opinion and faith that this is all happening for a reason. This is prophesized in the book of Revelation. I'll get into my views on the book of Revelation and the Bible as a whole in a later podcast. But and I might have already done one. Look back on the Gospel queue if I have one up. If not, I'll make one. But the point is that awareness is power. Knowledge is power. Ultimately, so let me answer a quick question. Should you buy Bitcoin? And I have to say, like, legally or whatever, this is not financial advice or whatever. But in my opinion, Bitcoin was, number one, created by the NSA. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that. I believe it was 1994, the NSA was authoring a white paper on cryptocurrencies. And that was what, 14 years, almost 15 years before Bitcoin was created. But so they were writing about it 15 years before it was created. Then it was created in 2008 anonymously by some revolutionary guy that basically wanted to take down the status quo. And initially, you know, it was only embraced by you know, geeks and people that were kind of written off on that front, you know, fringe. To now, it's institutionally accepted, you know, and you can buy things on websites and stuff with it. You know, it's not quite to the level of like Visa, MasterCard, but you know, in terms of how much money is now involved, it's being accepted by Wall Street, you know, and to some extent the world. You've had countries make it legal tender. Ukraine just did it, I believe, today. And anyways, the NSA likely created it. There's all more evidence. There's 256 SHA, which is a program that was created by the NSA on record, is in Bitcoin's programming. And I've heard so many people say, well, that doesn't matter. You know, like technically the NSA created or helped create GPS and the internet, you know, the Tor browser, which is a secure, anonymous way to access the internet and the dark web, was created by the Navy. You know, that's the argument I've heard. But when taken into context of the other evidence and other things at play, that's where you have to use discernment and you have to figure out, well, is this a good thing or not? So besides having the NSA programming, you also have some very, very prominent voices in the past that have openly suggested what I am saying right now, that the NSA and the US government created Bitcoin. Natalia Kaspersky, which I don't know if you've ever gotten those free, you know, inserts when you bought like a computer or ever had the service, but Kaspersky antivirus software is, I believe, like the number two, most would say, behind like McAfee or Norton, so number two or number three, or competitors. Natalia Kaspersky is one of the co-founders of the company. She said in an interview that she on record believes that it was created by the, I believe she said the NSA and the CIA together. But there were basically, it was several reasons, but the main one she was highlighting was following in the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, which if you've ever seen any documentaries on it or done any research, they were literally airlifting in pallets full of, you know, of dollars, of cash, to pay for the war and to pay, you know, locals and that sort of thing, and probably other, you know, things off the record. But the point is that you had to physically transfer the cash, which is very difficult and also opens the door to fraud, you know, which, you know, I'm not saying that that's not somewhat intentional, but the point is that, you know, from an operational standpoint, you got to, there's got to be an easier way for the logistics of it by itself. And so in her view, the solution was Bitcoin. It was pretty much anonymous and enabled the instant or near instant cash transfers of any amount globally in an instant. And the best part is that it was off the books. You know, it didn't go through SWIFT. It wasn't part of the regulated banking world. So you could fund, and this is her other point, is to fund black budget military operations worldwide by not only the United States, but its allies. So that, and that's what she said. Vitalik Buterin, the guy that created Ether, I always forget how to say it, Ethereum or Ethereum, I don't know. The guy that created that said, I believe this is shortly before it took off, but he said, I think it was in 2015, that he put the odds of it being created by, a Bitcoin being created by the NSA and the CIA or the US government at about 50 to 50. Which is pretty strong odds. And it was only after he became a Bitcoin or crypto billionaire that I think they followed up on it on that tweet that he did. And he then kind of backed up and said, well, you know, it's a possibility, but I wouldn't say 50-50. So one thing that you have to understand is when you make it in this world as an actual like wealthy elite person, it takes a lot of money to be wealthy, but it takes even more money and also power to stay there. You want to keep your money. If there's some really bad actors, and you know, watch the movie, watch Breaking Bad, or watch any of these shows, like, you know, The Sopranos. If you get to a certain level, if that level is at all corrupt, you by definition are going to be corruptible, or you're going to be taken out or pushed out. So to me, it doesn't surprise that he kind of changes the story. But you know, when people aren't watching and they don't think that anyone's paying attention or scrutinizing them, they'll speak their mind, and I think that's what happened. So maybe it doesn't matter, like the whole Tor network thing. Maybe it doesn't matter. But the point is that there's evidence that says it. Now let's look at the other facts, though. Bitcoin has been demonized for a long time by the establishment for being a decentralized platform and pseudo-anonymous. It's not fully anonymous, but pretty close. Those are the main attack points. And it's now, Bitcoin is now being considered a national security threat by the U.S. government. Okay? So just like Saddam Hussein wanting to sell his oil, or the other one I forgot was Muammar Gaddafi of Libya, he wanted to create the gold African-backed dinar, so a new currency for all of the African continent that all of Africa would use to transact with itself, to basically empower Africa to not only, you know, bring the wealth to Africa, because, you know, despite having the most natural resources on planet Earth, Africa is a third world in most every single country. The reason why is the way the banking system's set up. So when he made this proposal, it would have benefited Africa. And then it would have created a big demand, because then if you want to transact with Africa, which is the whole world, you would have to buy the dinar. Well, shortly after he came up with this idea, he was assassinated by Western-backed mercenaries, terrorists. And you know, I hope you don't have kids listening right now, but he was brutally sodomized within the end of an assault rifle, a machine gun. And the point is that Bitcoin does the same thing with the dollar and the global monetary system. It's not a person, right? Unless, it's not a person, it's a thing. But as we've seen throughout history, when the global elite, and you want to call it the government, the Illuminati, whatever you want to call it, the point is, the deep state, the point is that when the global true power structures, which I'm sorry, you're ignorant and naive if you don't think they exist. Maybe it's not lizard people, maybe it's not the Illuminati, you know, satanic people, maybe it's not just, you know, wealthy billionaires conspiring to keep themselves wealthy, you know, maybe it's none of that. I don't know. I can't tell you for sure. I can tell you my views, but I don't know. The point is that they exist. We don't have to argue about what they are, but they do exist. We can just agree on that. So if they do exist and you understand this fact, it's all being done for a reason. Okay, it's all being done for a reason. Now, I'm going to get into number one, the not financial advice. Buy gold. I like One Gold. It's a way that you can basically buy digital representations of gold. It's each amount of gold you buy is fully backed by audited gold held in some of the top five vaults in the world. You can invest, I think, as little as $5. So it's a great way to put your money somewhere that will be inflation sensitive. But the other obvious is just buying physical gold and silver, which I do recommend, because, you know, if the internet goes out, try proving that you own something versus holding it in your hand. Now, why gold? Why silver? I like silver, but it's very heavy. You know, the more of it you get, it's very heavy. So I always recommend gold. But why is that going to be good for in the middle of a global currency crisis? The main reason is because it's what the elites buy and use and store. If gold didn't have value, you would see central banks in the world selling all their gold right now, or, you know, in the recent years. But that's not what happened. Most central banks are buying it like crazy, as much as they can. China they don't allow any exporting of their gold. I think on a net basis, you know, maybe they do, but they don't allow to export more than they're taking in. But their central bank has been buying it like crazy, as has the Central Bank of Russia. look into some of the wealthy, you know, elite banking families in history, like the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers. Did they buy gold? Yeah. And are they buying, are those people, have you heard anything about Rothschilds buying Bitcoin? Or the Rockefellers buying Bitcoin? No, you haven't. Maybe they indirectly or directly own a lot of it or control it or manipulate it, you know, like they have with precious metals and stuff in the past, but are they personally investing in buying it? I haven't seen anything on that. The elite are their goal is to implement a global singular currency that's digital, electronic. How do you get people to willingly take the solution they're offering, which is essentially something that gives them more control over us? How do you get that when we, at a time of distrust of government and banking and stuff like that is, I feel, a very all-time high. How do you get people to accept it? Use a Trojan horse, and that's what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin is a Trojan horse. It was fringe originally and mocked, but once it was being institutionally accepted, that's when I started even more so like, whoa, okay, thumbs up. My prediction, and you can save this podcast, and I, you know what? I'm one of those people, if I make a bad prediction, I will go on record and be like, you know what? I was wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I really hope I'm wrong here. But what I ultimately think is going to happen is I think that Bitcoin is going to collapse. Because if you're in the camp of, you know, Bitcoin is going to perform great and it's going to be adopted by every country, then why would central banks be so hell-bent on issuing their own central bank digital currencies right now? Like, and furthermore, why would they, the central banks have hated and openly criticized and attacked Bitcoin before publicly, but increasingly governments are, and they're treating it as a national security threat, like I already said. You should call it a banking security threat, not national security, but that's basically what it is it's a threat to the system. Well, let's pretend that it was created by the NSA. That means it's controlled by the NSA. So it's controlled opposition. Somebody like Alex Jones or, you know, Donald Trump. I believe people like that are controlled opposition. It gives people this false idea and perception that this person or this thing is actually my friend or going to help me or is going to destroy my enemy. When in actuality, it's part of, you got played. And you're a willful participant because without our help and our consent and our control and our power, they can't do this to us. So Bitcoin collapses. And then the ensuing financial crisis that occurs is instantly blamed on Bitcoin because it's decentralized. It's not regulated and controlled, and there was no way to avoid the crisis. Then that creates the perfect pretext for central banks and governments to then say, hey, we got this great solution. It's called central banking digital currency, CBDCs. And unlike Bitcoin, it's regulated. The central banks control it and we can add money to the supply instantly when we need it and take away from it. You know, instant inflation, instant deflation. That is, I feel, the end game. Now, I'll go into it. I think I'll do a different podcast, but I'll leave you with, it's not just about money. It's not just about control. This is a battle for your soul. World War III is a spiritual global war on our spirit energy. You want to call it God or our souls, whatever it is. We are living in the times of the mark of the beast, as prophesied in the book of Revelation. It started off as vaccine passports, and then the COVID narrative started falling apart, whether intentional or not, it started falling apart. And now it's been called the digital ID. I knew that this was the mark as soon as I started seeing the way that the conservatives that are Christians started embracing it as well. Initially, when it was vaccine passports, most conservative states, governors said, we're going to abolish it, won't allow it. But then, very quickly, they started tying it to voter integrity. You know, all these Republicans and conservatives that say, oh, the election was stolen from Donald Trump. I think that was all planned. It was to get you to think like that. So now, well, hey, we can solve this problem of voter integrity by having a digital ID. Then the people can't vote fraudulently. Well, that's how you get these. Remember, in the book of Revelation, it says that that it was accepted by everyone. And there's only a small amount of people written in the Book of Life, 144,000. If you're talking about almost 8 billion people, that's not many people on a percentage basis. That's nothing. I believe that there's very few people that will actually refuse the mark. Very few, because it's going to be required for everything. Try living without a social security number right now. That's how hard life is going to be. And I don't know if you've ever tried that, you know, but it's not easy. And I can speak from experience, okay? I won't elaborate further, but I can speak from experience. It's not easy. So very few people are going to actually go by it, but we are living I'm not going to call them the end times. That's what the Bible says. I say it's the new world times, because there's going to be a new world, the new world order, which the banking elite and shadow elite of the world are creating. But God's new world is also being created right now for us. You know, I hear about the crisis and stuff going on right now in the news feed, but I look outside and I hear the birds singing, and it's a beautiful day out. And I know it's not that way everywhere, you know, and Fukushima just had a huge, massive earthquake, but you can't have life without death. You can't have darkness without light. There's duality. Those we have with faith in God, that is the only currency that you need to buy right now is faith. I tell people this stuff and they get scared. They tell me, this scares me. And I say, look, I'm not telling this to scare you. I'm telling it to have more faith, because fear cannot live within someone that has absolute faith in God. And I'll get into this more later, but God is singular. There is one universal God known by many names. So if you're Jewish, Christian, Catholic, Muslim, it doesn't matter. It's the point is that you need to start recognizing there's one God, and that other faiths are not your enemy. They all worship the same God. What's different is the culture, the tradition, the language, the translations, and the history. That's what's different. Have faith in God, because God will provide for you. I'll read you one of my favorite passages right now. Jesus spoke to his disciples, "Don't be anxious about your life. Don't worry about getting enough food or having clothes to wear. Life means more than food, and the body is more than clothing. Look at the ravens. They don't plant seeds or gather a harvest. They have neither storehouses nor barns, yet God feeds them. Aren't you more important than birds? Can any of you, for all your worrying, add a single moment to your life? If worry can't change the smallest thing, then why be anxious about the rest? Look at the lilies that grow in the wild and the fields. They don't weave clothes for themselves, but I tell you, even King Solomon in all his splendor was not dressed as beautifully as these flowers. If that is how God clothes the grasses, which are green today and burned in the sun tomorrow, how much more will God provide for you? How little faith you had. Don't be blinded by the pursuit of food, clothing, and possessions. Stop worrying about these things. Only those who lack spirit and soul pursue them. You have a Father who knows what you need. Set your heart on God, and these things will be given to you." So the point is that have faith. God will protect you and provide for you. And you know, you can look in history at various times when, you know, people undergo very different, you know, trials and tribulations, but they can kill the body, but they cannot kill the spirit. This world, this physical world, is temporary. This world is the illusion. Yes, it's real, but there is far more beyond it than I can even explain to you with words. It's the kingdom of God that lives within you. The kingdom of God is not some far off place. It's not at a church. It's not in a holy land in Mecca or anything like that. The kingdom of God exists eternally within you. Thank you so much for listening. May God bless you.